Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Living Untethered, Beyond the Human Predicament, by Michael A. Singer, narrated by the author, Michael A. Singer. To the Masters. Part 1. Conscious Awareness. Chapter 1. Awareness of Self. Sitting on a planet spinning through vast outer space for a handful of years, in the broadest sense, this is the human predicament. Earth has been here for 4.5 billion years, yet each of us is limited to roughly an 80-year ride on the planet, give or take a few years. If we were born onto the planet, and we will leave it when we die. That is simply the truth. What is not such a hard and fast truth, however, is what our few years on Earth are like. Undoubtedly, life on the planet can be a very exciting experience. It can bring enthusiasm, passion, and inspiration at every turn. When it unfolds that way, every day can be a beautiful adventure. Unfortunately, life on Earth rarely unfolds exactly as we want it to, and if we resist, our experience can be quite unpleasant. Resistance creates tension and anxiety, and it makes life a burden. To avoid this burden and be able to fully embrace life, wise ones throughout the ages have taught the importance of accepting reality. Only by accepting reality can we work with the flow of life as it passes by and create a better world. All of science is based on studying reality, learning our laws, and then working with those laws to improve our lives. Scientists can't deny reality. They must fully accept reality as a starting point of their endeavors. To fly, we must fully embrace the law of gravity, not deny its existence. The same is true in the spiritual realm. Teachings such as surrender, acceptance, and non-resistance form the basis of a deeply spiritual life. But these concepts can be difficult to grasp. In Living Untethered, we are embarking on a journey into the sheer reasonableness of acceptance and the great gift it promises, freedom, peace, and inner enlightenment. Acceptance is best understood as non-resistance to reality. Try as you may, no one can make an event that has already happened not have happened. Your only choice is to accept the event or resist it. During our journey together, we'll explore how and why you make this decision. But first, you have to understand who is within that has the power to decide. You are certainly in there. You have an intuitive sense of existence inside. What is that? It is awareness of self, the most important topic we could ever discuss. Since we're going to take a deep dive into the spirituality of acceptance, we must start by understanding who is in there, accepting or resisting. There are many ways to approach the nature of self. Let's go slowly and start with something very simple. Imagine someone comes up to you and asks, "Hi, are you in there?" How would you respond? No one would actually say, "No, I'm not in here." That would be the ultimate non sequitur. If you're not in there, who responded? You're definitely in there. But what does that mean? To isolate what "you in there" means, imagine you're shown three different photographs. The photos are held up one after the other, and then you're asked, though the photos changed, was it the same you who saw all three of them? Your response would be, "Of course it was the same me." Very good. That helps us get our bearings. From this simple exercise, it's clear that you in there are not what you look at. You are the one who's looking. The pictures changed. You who saw them stayed the same. It's not hard to understand with photographs that you are not what you look at, but there are some objects we identify with more than others. For example, our bodies. We identify with our bodies enough to say, "I'm a 43-year-old woman who is 5'6". Is that really who you are in there? A 43-year-old 5'6" female body? Or is the body something you in there are aware of? To sort this out, let's start with your hand. If you were asked whether you can see your hand, you would say, "Yes, I see my hand." Okay, but what if it got cut off? Don't worry about the pain. Just for a moment imagine it's gone. Would you still be there? Wouldn't you notice that your hand is gone? It's like the changing photographs. When the hand was there, you saw it. When it was gone, you saw it was gone. You in there who sees did not change. What you were looking at changed. Your body is just another thing you see. The question remains, who is in there doing the seeing? Note that we didn't have to stop with the hand. Surgery has become so advanced that with the help of a heart-lung machine and other medical devices, surgeons could remove a great deal of your body, and the same sense of self would still be in there, aware of the changes. How could you be your body if it changed that much and you in there stayed the same? Fortunately, to help you realize you are not your body, we don't really need to go that far. There's a much simpler, intuitive way to approach this. Surely you've noticed that your body didn't look the same when you were 3, 10, 20, or 50 years old. It certainly won't look the same when you're 80 or 90. But isn't it the same you in there looking at it? When you were 10 years old and you looked in the mirror, did you see what you see now? No. But wasn't it you looking then and now? You've been in there the whole time, haven't you? That's the core, the essence of everything we're discussing. Who are you? Who is in there looking out through those eyes and seeing what you're seeing? Just like when you were shown the 3 photographs, you are not any of the photos. You are the one looking at them. Likewise, when you look out at the mirror, you are not what you see. You are the one who sees it. Little by little, through the use of these examples, we are revealing the nature of self. Your relationship to what you see is always one of subject-object. You are the subject, and what you are looking at is the object. There are many different objects coming through your senses, but there's only one subject experiencing them, you. Chapter 2, The Conscious Receiver. Once you recognize that you're in there, you're going to notice that objects around you tend to distract your consciousness. A neighborhood dog barks, someone walks in the room, you smell the aroma of coffee, and your awareness is drawn to these objects. On a daily basis, you're so distracted by external objects that you rarely remain centered in you, the conscious receiver of these objects. Let's take a moment to examine the real relationship between this conscious receiver and the objects it is distracted by. To look at this scientifically, you're not even looking at the outer objects. Right now, you're not actually looking out at what you see. What is happening is that rays of light are bouncing off the molecules that make up the outer objects. These reflected rays are hitting your eyes' photoreceptors and being transmitted back as messages through your nervous system. These messages are then rendered in your mind as an image of the external object. You're actually seeing the objects inside, not outside. We are slowly peeling back the onion to see what it's like to be you. Things are certainly not what they appear to be. Even science backs that up. It's like you're sitting inside looking at a mental flat-screen monitor that is imaging the world in front of you. You're obviously not the object you're looking at. After all, you're not even looking at the actual object. If you work your way back, the question becomes, who am I in here looking at a mental image of what is in front of me? There was a great saint from India, an enlightened master named Ramana Maharshi. His entire spiritual path was to every moment persistently ask, who sees when I see? Who hears when I hear? Who feels when I feel? Self-realization, the term for enlightenment the yoga master Paramahansa Yogananda used, means you have fully realized who you are in there. The entire spiritual journey back to the seat of self is not about finding yourself. It's about realizing you are the self. Even in a Judeo-Christian sense, if somebody asks whether they have a soul, the correct answer is no, you don't have a soul. You in there, the consciousness, are the soul. Thus, who are you becomes the quintessential question. You can't free yourself until you understand who it is that's bound. Likewise, you can't understand acceptance until you understand who is resisting. Let's continue our exploration of self. Earlier we discussed that when you were young, you looked out through your eyes and saw a certain reflection in the mirror. Later in your life, you saw a very different reflection. from that point of view, how old are you? Not how old is your body. How old are you in there who's looking out through those eyes at your body? If you were in there when you were 10, if you were in there when you're 20, if you're going to be in there on your deathbed noticing that you're dying, then what age are you in there? Don't answer that question. Just let it touch you at a very deep level. Are you willing to let go of traditional concepts about your age? Let's do another interesting experiment. Imagine you're looking in the mirror right after taking a shower. Do you see the reflection of a male or female body? What if suddenly, via some mysterious power, it changes? Somehow the body parts change. If you were a male, you're now looking at a female. If you're a female, you're now looking at a male. Would it still be the same you in there looking at that body? Would it still be the same consciousness that has always looked out through those eyes, now seeing a very different body? You would probably be saying, "What happened? What's going on here?" Nevertheless, it would be the same you having the entire experience. So what gender are you in there? You in there, who has no body parts, can't have a gender. All you can have is awareness that when you look out through your eyes, the body you're looking at has a certain form and shape. That form and shape might be male or female, but you who notices are neither. The question remains, who are you? The awareness that intuitively knows you're in there. Your body has an age, your body has a gender, but those concepts are irrelevant to the one who notices the body. If you look at a tall, 100-year-old vase, does that make you tall and 100 years old? The same is true of race. Your skin may be a certain color, but the consciousness that notices this has no color at all. You are not your body. You are the one who notices the characteristics of your body. You are the conscious awareness within that is looking at all of this. The question is, are you willing to let go of who you thought you were? Because who you thought you were is not who you are. The same inner being is looking at your body, your house, your car. You are the subject, and the rest are objects of consciousness. Let's turn to something a little lighter. At night you go to sleep, and you often dream. You wake up in the morning and you say, "I had a dream." That statement is actually very deep. How do you know that you had a dream? Do you merely remember the dream, or were you actually in there experiencing it? The answer is very simple. You were in there experiencing it. The same you who looks out through those eyes and sees the outer world was experiencing the events occurring in the dream. There's only one conscious being in there, and you're either experiencing the waking world or the dream world. Note that when describing your interactions with both worlds, you intuitively use the word "I," as in, "I was flying through the clouds with my arms open wide. Then I suddenly woke up, and I realized I was in my bed." In the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali, which is a very ancient yogic text, Patanjali discusses the topic of deep, dreamless sleep. He says that when you go to sleep and there are no dreams, it's not that you are not conscious, it's that you are conscious of nothing. If you spend time contemplating this, you're going to find that you're always conscious in there. Even people who get knocked unconscious or go into coma often come back and tell us what they were experiencing. People have near-death experiences in which they leave their bodies and come back to tell about it. Whatever the source of these experiences, the same you in there experienced them and were able to describe what you experienced. How can you call that not being conscious? Medically, what we call conscious has to do with awareness of our external surroundings. However, the concept of whether you in there are consciously aware of anything, that's another story altogether. You're always conscious. You've been conscious from the beginning. You're aware of what you focus on, internally or externally. Who are you? Who is that consciously aware entity inside? Chapter 3, Living Inside. We are back to the most basic truths of your life. You're in there. You know that you're in there. And you've been in there all along. This raises some interesting questions, such as, when the body dies, will you still be aware of being? Isn't that an interesting question? Don't get excited. We're not going to answer that for you. Eventually, however, there will be someone who provides that answer. You. You're guaranteed to personally find out someday whether you will be there after the body dies. Why do people have so much trouble with death? It's got to be one of the most exciting aspects of your life. It's truly a once-in-a-lifetime experience. That is what's waiting for you at the time of death. After that final moment, either you're going to be there or you're not. If you're not there, don't worry. It's not like, oh my God, I'm not here. I don't like this. No, you're not there, so it's not going to be a problem. The other alternative, however, is much more interesting. What if you are there? Then you're going to find out what it's like to explore a whole other universe where you don't even have a body. Let's not talk about it further, because it runs into people's beliefs, concepts, or views about the subject. Let's just let it be something to look forward to as the ultimate once-in-a-lifetime experience. The reason some people have so much trouble with death is because they identify with their bodies. As if that's not enough, they identify with their cars and their houses. People project their sense of self onto things that are not their self. When they do that, they feel afraid to lose those things. As you work your way through your inner growth, you won't identify with these outer objects anymore. You'll identify with a deeper sense of self within. Now that it's clear that you're in there, it becomes reasonable to ask, what do you do in there? Even more relevant, what's it like in there? What an interesting question to ask. What's it like in there? If people answered honestly, most would say that it's not always so much fun in there. In fact, sometimes it's downright tough. What's that all about? This is where we get down to a real honest discussion about inner growth. Most people don't realize that it can always be nice in there. Take the nicest it's ever been, holding your first child, the day of your wedding, your first kiss, winning the lottery. Recall that state, then increase it multifold and have it be that way all the time, except that it keeps getting higher. That is what you are capable of experiencing inside. That is the truth. It is really beautiful in there, but something is messing it up. Imagine walking into a house that has dirt, banana peels, and pizza crust all over the place. It happens to be a beautiful house, but no one took care of it. It can be beautiful again, but some work needs to be done. That is exactly the situation inside you. In fact, that is why we're on this inner exploration. Everybody wants the same thing. They would like it to be nice in there. People do all kinds of things trying to make it nice in there. Some run around trying to have exciting experiences, find fulfilling relationships, or even take the edge off with drinking or drugs, all for the same reason. The problem is they're approaching the issue in the wrong way. They're asking how to make it nice in there, while the more relevant question is why is it not nice? If you find out why it's not nice, and you get rid of that, you're going to find out that it can be really nice in there. Life doesn't have to be a game of, since it's not nice in here, I need to find things that will compensate for that in order to feel a little bit better. That is what everybody's doing. They are trying to find people, places, and things in the outside world that will unfold in a way that makes it more comfortable inside. People are trying to use the outside to fix the inside. Better to find out why it's not nice inside to begin with. Chapter 4, The Three-Ring Circus. I'm in here, I'm conscious, and what I'm conscious of is that it's not always so nice in here. That honest statement is a wonderful launching pad for continuing our exploration of self and the power of acceptance. What is it you experience that sometimes makes it nice inside and sometimes makes it very difficult? There are only three things you experience in there, so let's take a look at them. First, you experience the outside world coming through your senses. There's a whole world out there, and what's in front of you comes in through your eyes, ears, nose, and senses of taste and touch. When it comes in, it's either a pleasant experience, an unpleasant experience, or just passing through experience. Thus, the outside world is one of the things you deal with that has a profound effect on your inner state. as overwhelming as the outside world can be, it's not all you experience inside. You also have thoughts in there. You hear the thoughts saying, I don't know if I like this. I don't even understand why she did it. Or perhaps, wow, I'd like to have a car like that. I would go for long weekend rides in the country. If you're asked who is saying all this inside your head, you'll probably say it's you, but it's not you. Those are your thoughts, and you are the one who's noticing the thoughts. Thoughts are just another thing you notice in there. You notice the world coming in from outside, and you notice the thoughts that are generated inside. Where do thoughts come from? We're going to discuss that at length later, but for right now, understand that thoughts and the outside world are two of the three things you experience inside. The third thing you experience is your feelings or emotions. There are feelings that come up suddenly like fear. Your mind can say, I feel scared, but if you didn't actually feel scared, the impact would be much less. It's the fact that you actually experience the emotion of fear that causes the problem. Some feelings are pleasant. I felt love. I felt more love than I've ever felt before. You like that feeling. Other feelings are unpleasant. I'm feeling fear, embarrassment, and guilt coming up all at the same time. You don't like that, do you? We've already come a long way in our exploration of self. We've proven that you're in there, and the strongest proof is that you know that you're in there. This is your seat of awareness. Anytime you get lost, just stand in front of the mirror and say, Hi, are you in there? Wave at yourself and realize, Yep, I see somebody waving. Who am I that sees that? This is a way to center back to your seat of awareness. While you stand there, notice what else you're aware of. Notice your surroundings coming in through your senses, your thoughts passing through your mind, and any emotions that arise in your heart, creating feelings of comfort or discomfort within. These three inner experiences are the arena in which your consciousness plays the game of life on planet Earth. Bottom line, you don't stand a chance in there. The constant barrage of these three experiences is like a three-ring circus going on inside all the time. The effect is so overwhelming, it's like a conspiracy against you. The outside world has a major influence on your thoughts, and your thoughts and emotions will generally line up. It's very rare that your mind will be saying, I don't like this, and your heart will be feeling tremendous love. Let's say Fred passes by and your mind says, I don't want to see Fred. I'm not comfortable seeing him after the argument we had last time. You will start to feel fear. You were doing fine until an event came in from the outside, took over your thoughts, and generated difficult emotions. You get sucked into that overwhelming experience. Now if you're asked, what's it like living in there? You would probably say, it's pretty intense. I get lost a lot and struggle to be okay. It's not all that much fun, is it? Buddha said all of life is suffering. He wasn't being negative. All of life is suffering. If you're rich, poor, sick, healthy, young, or old, it doesn't matter. There certainly are times when you're not suffering, but the vast majority of what's going on is you're just trying to be okay. That's what it boils down to. You at some point realize that's all you've done your entire life, try to be okay. That's why you cried when you were little. You weren't okay in there. That's why you wanted a certain toy. You thought it would make you okay. That's why you wanted to marry this special person. That's why you wanted to go to Europe or Hawaii for a vacation. You get to the point where you realize all you're ever doing in there is trying to be okay. First you think about what will make you okay. Then you go out and try to make it happen. What does it even mean to try to be okay? For one thing, it means trying to make your thoughts and emotions easier to live with. There are nice ones, and there are not so nice ones. You like the nice ones. That's what you're struggling with. You want your thoughts to be positive, uplifting, and beautiful. The problem is, there's an outside world of reality that can come in and cause your thoughts and emotions to be very difficult. That is why life can be overwhelming. This interaction with the world, your thoughts, and your emotions raises some very interesting questions. What are these three things? And where do they come from? How much control do you have over them? Why do they sometimes make you feel good and other times make you feel bad? We're going to explore these questions in great detail. When we're through, you'll realize that what really matters is not the thoughts, the emotions, nor the outside world. What really matters is you in there who is experiencing these things. How are you doing? What we'll see is that you in there are higher than any experience you've ever had. The one who is seeing all of this is the most beautiful thing in the whole universe. If you ever find your way back to the seat of self, that's what you're going to discover. That is what Christ taught you, what Buddha taught you, and what all the great spiritual masters of every tradition have taught. The kingdom is within you. You in there are a very great being made in the image of God. But to know that, you have to free yourself from all the inner commotion. Chapter 5. Exploring the Nature of Things. Your entire life is composed of consciously experiencing the three objects of consciousness, the outside world, the thoughts, and the emotions. Now we are ready to explore the origin and nature of these experiences. By understanding where they come from, they will lose some of the distractive power they have over you. You will then better understand your tendency to accept or reject them. We study these objects of consciousness not solely for the knowledge we gain, but also for the freedom we attain. Let's discuss the nature of the world passing before you. Every moment that passes before you comes and goes like the frames of a motion picture. The moments never stop. They just keep flowing through time and space. Where do all these moments come from? Why do you experience them the way that you do? What is your true relationship to what passes before you? Perhaps even more interesting than the outside world, we're going to explore the nature of the mind and the emotions, including how and why they keep changing the way that they do. Though all three of these objects of consciousness are constantly changing, you are the persistent being that is always there experiencing them. What is your nature? What is it like to sit back and be conscious of being conscious? That is what all spirituality is about. When you are no longer distracted by any of the three great distractors, your consciousness will no longer be pulled into those objects. The focus of consciousness will very naturally remain in the source of consciousness. It's like a flashlight shining on various objects. Instead of looking at the objects being illumined, if you look at the light itself, you will realize it is the same light shining on all the different objects. Likewise, it is the same consciousness that is aware of all the objects passing before you, both outside and in. You are that consciousness. When you pull back to that source of awareness, it is the most beautiful thing you will ever experience. That is the journey before us. To free ourselves from the distractions that keep drawing us away from our greatness and leave us struggling with life. As you come to understand the nature of these objects you are struggling with, you will very naturally be able to release the hold they have on you. This act of letting go is what is meant by acceptance and surrender. There is a state of great peace within you that cannot be disturbed by the world, your thoughts, or even your emotions. These objects can continue to freely exist, but they will no longer dominate your life. You will be free to fully interact in life, but you will do so out of a sense of love and service rather than fear or desire. Now you understand the underlying purpose of this book, for you to learn how to let go of the three great distractors and return to the source of your being. As you will see, this is the only way you can fully enjoy your time here on earth. This is what it means to be living untethered. It doesn't take forceful practices to return to your core. The highest path is learning through your daily life to gradually let go of what is distracting your consciousness. By accepting instead of resisting, you will eventually attain a permanent seat of clarity. It's called becoming established in the seat of self. You will be living in the most beautiful energy you've ever experienced, and it will never stop. During every moment of your life, there will be a beautiful flow of energy that keeps rising within you. We're going to approach this process of freeing yourself in a very scientific, analytical manner. By doing so, you become so comfortable with the three objects of consciousness passing before you that you will no longer have to devote your life to controlling the experience. you will see that these passing objects represent the lower aspect of your being.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?